On Pilot TV this week, we're taking a turn as planetary protectors with Aaron Pierre and Kyle Chandler in Lanterns on HBO Max, unraveling more puzzles with David Mitchell in Series 2 of Ludwig on BBC One, and getting a spray tan with Will Forte and Darcy Carden in Australian comedy Sunny Nights on ITV. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to Pilot TV, your essential guide to every show that matters. And I'm delighted, nay, overjoyed, to be reunited by my two co-pilots, Steph Seal and Boyd Hilton. How are you? You didn't burn the place down while I was away. That's nice to see.
No, we recovered from recording four podcasts in half a minute or whatever. However, you did.
You did four podcasts in, was it 2 days, 3 days?
Pretty much, yeah.
In 4 days. Yeah. I only did two of them.
Heroic is the word.
I mean, yeah. You've got a slight tan.
A slight tan. So are you? I'm ever so slightly less translucent.
Yeah, you are. And
than
question,
usual.
Is it Will Forte? Because I've been calling him Will Fort.
Forte.
Mm. Yeah.
It's just another one of those.
Pronunciations
things.
Are not your forte.
No, they're not. Okay.
No.
Will Forte. That's a great name.
Yeah. But you did four podcasts back to back.
Four back to back.
I listened to them all while on holiday in Italy. Oh. I have prepared copious notes.
Oh, great.
It is one of those classic things where I'm listening to it and I'm just going. Because I just I feel in the need to respond to your wrongness.
Did you turn to the Reddit and
a couple of strongly worded threads on the Reddit. Yeah, absolutely.
I can never ever go on the Reddit again.
Of course not.
And I just want to know, just like give me ballpark, how many emails of vitriolic emails of hatred about Vampire Lestat have you had to head off?
Well, I'm going to say let's get to that. I think we can balance off the hate over Vampire Lestat with the hate over Alley Cat, because the postbag has been bulging with both of those. But we covered that a little bit on Pilot Plus. Yes, there was. But it was
nice.
Nice that you and Kay and Steph were able to carry the torch forward in defence of that show.
Yeah.
Alone as you were.
I'm still 100% in defence of that show. And it's tender moments, and it's choice of music, and the fact that, I mean, the thing is like, Ricky Gervais literally is the fat cat in that show and the fat cat of Netflix, and that's all we need
I mainly
to
love it because of it's animated, and my love for animation is renowned.
Yes, Boydie, and we will be getting onto that very, very shortly. But before we do that, it is time for what we have been watching. Hello. And I'm going to start this week to say that I made a promise to myself when I went on holiday to Italy, Lake Garda, very nice, do recommend it, that I wasn't going to watch any TV for the 2 weeks that
Did
I was
you?
Off. Yeah, and that lasted for 48 hours. And let me tell you what I watched after that. So, where to even begin? First of all, Lioness. I have finished Lioness. I watched all of season two while I was away. I am now well into season three. Unfortunately, they haven't given me all the screenings. You were so wrong in your review of season three of Lioness. Like, season three is fucking brilliant, and it kicks off with the whole dual timeline thing. The thing that happens in the first episode and then picks up in the second one is mad. Although I will say, I get that if you don't know who any of these characters are and if you're not invested in them, you're right. I can see why there would be no stakes in what was happening, because the way Lioness kind of works is each season seems to begin with a massive Michael Bay-esque action set piece, and honestly, the quality of them, incredible. There's a rescue at the beginning of season two, which is like, I mean, it's 100% big screen worthy. This Ukraine one wasn't quite as impressive, but I thought it was really interesting in choosing that as a theatre of war, just because the whole drone thing that's going on in Ukraine is like nothing people have ever seen before. And I thought they did a really good job of portraying that.
Use the same shot of thousands of drones about five times.
But then I suppose like thousands of drones look like thousands of drones, right?
Yeah.
You know, they do they basically just fly down and blow up. Like, they weren't doing tricks or anything.
No. Okay.
But I thought season three is it's everything I wanted it to be. It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. So very excited. I hate to say this, Steph, Lioness is my favourite Taylor Sheridan show.
Well, he's in this, isn't he?
He is. And he plays Cody, the old soldier. And he's not in it much, but he's a lot of fun when he's in it. So, yeah, I'm really, really loving
it's
Lioness.
I like the fact that he cast himself as a heroic soldier.
He's also a bit of a dick in it, though.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. Wow.
But yeah, really, really like Lioness. So I do highly recommend that. Star Trek Strange New Worlds, which we did not review on this podcast.
We didn't, and we should have done. You know what? I've got some of my Trekkie friends are watching that and are absolutely loving it.
How many Trekkie friends have you got?
Oh, I've got like four solid Trekkie friends who like I have. Like, they're very Trekkie Doctor Who-y friends, and we have like little chats about it. Yeah, and I've got one of them onto Sugar, which they're very happy about. But yeah, and they're loving it.
What I wanted to talk about was the Griffin incident, which is the second episode of this season, which is like nothing Star Trek has ever done before, because it is a pure horror episode. It's like full Event Horizon, but it's proved really controversial. I mean, it's quite unpleasant. It's quite gory. Like, it's a lot for Star Trek. But I think the thing that's upset people is, and I think this was the right decision, they have leaned into a... I don't even want to say supernatural, but let's just say there isn't a scientific explanation for what's going on. And obviously that kind of rubs a little bit against what Star Trek is, because it's all about the science and the explanation. Yeah. And it is, but it's really, really creepy. And I thought it was great. And actually, I think if they had gone down the more tangible scientific route, you would have robbed it of all its power. I think one of the reasons it's scary is you don't really understand it. But it's a really mad episode of Strange New Worlds. And I think Strange New Worlds, I've talked about the kind of elasticity of the tone of that show, but there's been nothing like that. They've dabbled in horror before with all the Gorn stuff, but this one in particular was really good.
Mm. Had you finished Starfleet Academy? Because one of my friends
absolutely
bereft that it's been cancelled.
I know.
Now.
Well, we're getting a second season, but that will be the last.
Yeah.
But yeah, I liked Starfleet Academy. I thought it was loads of fun.
Okay.
The other thing I've been watching is Ted Lasso. I've watched all the episodes they have given us, which is 5 out of the, I want to say, 7 episodes of this 4th season. And I agree with Boydie that the first episode is fucking abysmal. Like, absolutely awful.
God, I totally disagree with you. Did you listen to the podcast?
I did, yes.
Both Boyd and Kate didn't like
it. It's dreadful.
It's not dreadful.
It's dreadful. It made me not want to persevere, but I'm glad I did, because it is an island in and of itself. It has no relation to the rest of the show. And once you get into episode 2, it's the Ted Lasso that you're looking for. So
it's a setup.
Setup. But it was wrong-headed, because I think all of that, and I think Boyd even said this in the review, you could have covered that off in a 3-minute conversation and we'd have all been happier for it. We didn't need to go to Kansas. We didn't need to see all that stuff. It was incredibly predictable. It annoyed me.
I think, as I said at the time, I think there were a lot of good things that came out of that episode and a lot of, you know, nice things that happened in that episode.
Well,
some good messaging.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. I did not. But I have enjoyed the series as a whole. I really like the new team. I think it's really fun. Weirdly, I'm enjoying the time with the new team more than I'm enjoying some of the older stuff. Like, Roy, I think, is great. I kind of a bit over the Roy Keeley thing. So I'm a bit like, I don't care so much about that. So
I think they are stretching that.
Yeah, so I'd maybe like to spend less time on that and more exploring these new characters, because I think Tanya Reynolds is fucking great in this. Jude Mack as the goalie boots is great. Faye Marseille is really good in this. And I like the twins as well, which I think is Ashlyn Sharkey and Rex Hayes. Really, really fun. So I'm actually having a lot of fun with this. I do have one bugbear, though. I hate Tracy Ullman's character. Hate her. So I'm really struggling with that, because it's so over the top. And I'm like, every time she comes on screen, I'm like, oh, God.
If you saw her in her character in Curb Your Enthusiasm,
right,
you'll know she goes full on. She does go full on.
I could do without that character, it has to be said.
She's a bit pantomimey.
A little bit, yeah. So I'm not enjoying that.
Funny, yeah. I love Tracy Ullman. I'm all for her.
I have nothing against her personally. I'm not enjoying her in the show.
Know.
Yeah. But, you know, it's cheeseballs. All the show, is it sentimental? And it still kind of straddles that. Is it a comedy? Is it a drama line? I guess, because it's mainly because of the length, I guess. But I'm having fun with it.
I like it. It's getting slated. It seems to be getting slated.
I don't know why.
The criticisms are stupid. I've seen 2 or 3articles now taking the line that, what's the point of bringing it back? What's the point of bringing anything back? Particularly, it's a sitcom.
Yeah.
I know we've debated long and hard about, is it a drama? But it is essentially a sitcom. Sitcoms come back and they just recur and you catch up.
I understand what people mean by that. And I think I said to one of our, one of my Instagram pilot friends that when I'd finished this season, I was like, does this need to be resuscitated? So I can understand
if you do it well and it's still supremely enjoyable, it's fine. If you do it badly, like the terrible Frasier return, which is belated, then it's terrible. But there's nothing intrinsically wrong with bringing back
a show, and I totally agree, but I can understand why some people
have been the tenor. Yeah. I've been surprised by the tenor of the criticism being, what is the point? And you're like, well, the point is to entertain us.
Which I would argue it does, because it does what it's always done. It has that kind of really positive feel-good vibe. I think one of these things, and we've talked about this before, right? Like, if Ted Lasso had come out in a year other than 2020, would it have been the hit that it was? I don't know that it would have. I mean, it's a good show, timing, but I think it has an inherent optimism and buoyancy to it that we were all so desperate for during lockdown, during the pandemic, that we just embraced it wholeheartedly. And then when it went on its slightly melancholy trip, we were like, okay, what's going on here? It's now a massive downer.
That's true.
And it's not now, which is good. So I think it does what it needs to do. And I actually enjoy the women's football aspect of it. I think it's interesting. You know,
we found a football that you love. Yeah,
but,
oh
but
my
it's
God.
A different, it's a different take, like repeating the same thing with the men's team. We've kind of done that, where it's actually the kind of the difficulties that the women's team is facing and actually getting recognition, which because the men's team have it, like things like the changing room, stuff like that. That's actually another interesting thread to this. Mm-hmm. So I'm enjoying Ted Lasso.
Colour me shocked.
Yeah.
I have been watching House of the Dragon, which is now finished. Yes. There's been the finale for House of the Dragon. We have an interview with Ryan Condal, which I need to put up on Pilot Plus. I enjoyed that a lot, but we'll talk about that more on Pilot Plus in detail. What else have I watched? I have been watching The Vampire Lestat, Steph. Now, we talked about this a little bit on Pilot Plus, but Steph has been inundated with hate mail from everyone on the internet after her reaction to The Vampire Lestat.
I don't know how to look straight into the camera, but I would, please, okay, I get it. You're really cross with me. And immediately on the YouTube, I said when someone was really cross with me, I was like, okay, I'm gonna watch this because everyone keeps going on. And I also did mention this before, but several really lovely, lovely pilot Instagram friends of mine messaged me and explained in detail why they thought I was missing a trick, and it was really, really nice, and it was wonderful, and all the you know, brilliant things about it. And I listened, and we'll get into it, but I have now boxed off season one.
You have, you watched season one, and we'll get into that and what you've been watching.
Yes, you go.
But what I'm going to say with The Vampire Lestat is, and I think I've got two episodes left to watch.
Okay,
I think it's really good. I am enjoying it. I think what they've done with it is actually quite impressive. This kind of pivot to this, you know, glam rock, high camp version of the show. While I appreciate it, it's not what I wanted, because what I wanted was what the novel is, which is the historical retreading of the story of Lestat, chronologically repeating all the interview stuff from his point of view, the stuff before that, the stuff after that, the stuff that leads into Queen of the Damned. All of that was what I wanted. This has given me something different. It's thought-provoking, and it's really stylish, and it's really well executed, and it plays into the fact that Sam Reed is just wonderful in that role. And, you know, we talked about the singing a little bit. The singing, certainly early on, I think is deliberately
mentioned that it's supposed to be bad.
Because I think it's better. Also about honesty. Like this series, it's all about him as an unreliable narrator and him as kind of being slightly self-deluding. And I think when he starts to be more honest with himself and when his songs become more personal, they really, you know, they're banging. Like, he's actually, they're pretty good. So I think it actually becomes an interesting part of the show. It's kind of this sort of spine of this story. Like I say, it's not what I wanted from these books, being a fan of the books, but as a show, it's really good. So it is a pivot, Steph. So, but, you know, we'll get to what you thought of Interview with the Vampire. Yeah. But if you do revisit it, I'd be interested to see what you make of it off the back of the others. But on that particular episode of the podcast, where you let rip on The Vampire Lestat, that was not the only show that we gave a kicking to. The other show we gave a kicking to was serial killer thriller on Disney Plus, Furious. And let me tell you, the response to our review among our listeners was equally furious, because a lot of people were saying, what are you talking about? This show is great. You should give it a chance. And we were like, well, I wouldn't, like, because none of us really liked it. We thought it was very meh.
So although I was just like Emmy Rossum.
Right. So off the back of many people saying, you should give this another chance, it's actually really good. I have watched now, I think, about 6 episodes of it. It's really good.
You literally didn't go on holiday. You watched more TV than anything else.
It's true. So I'm really into Furious at the moment. And I think, I stand by the fact I don't think the first episode is the best. And we didn't have time to watch a second episode of this one. But I think all the criticisms I had of the first one, that it was a little bit tropey. I thought that the female serial killer in this was very mannered and over the top. And I felt like her boss in the kind of sex crimes unit, I was like, what is going on with this performance? All of these things kind of click into place about halfway through the second episode. And I think Emmy Rossum's character, her kind of domestic violence past and how that plays out with the person that she was with, is incredibly gripping. But the serial killer storyline is also a lot more interesting than you are initially led to believe. The motivations behind the serial killer, her MO, like the background. And as the mystery unfolds, it's like, it really does get its claws into you. And I've even forgiven her boss for that early episode now. So,
oh, I'm going to go back to that.
I am now on board with Furious.
I knew this was going to happen.
What?
Because it's we were definitely like we definitely stood alone in our criticism of the show, and like in other TV review podcasts, like I mentioned, I won't name them. They loved it, like people loved it, and it got like 4 or 5 stars in the Guardian. Well, we often talk about other people's reviews and Rotten Tomatoes and Metacritic and all that bullshit, which I religiously refuse to accept means we have to toe their line. But no. I too watched the second episode.
Oh. Okay.
Yes. Mainly out of interest. Once it started getting these really, really good reviews, I was like, oh, what did we miss? I still feel justified. A bit like the first episode of Ted Lasso, the new season.
Okay.
I still think the way they set the scene in the first episode of Furious is full of cliched moments.
Yeah,
there's some terrible dialogue in it. I think it is deeply flawed, but episode 2 is much better.
Yeah, it definitely.
So I'm probably going to have to find time to watch.
Going back to that like first episode, and we'd all had problems with it because I'm watching The Shards at the moment, and I am just loving it so much. I don't know whether I probably should go back to Furious. I don't know. It just feels.
Well, finish The Shards first. That's fine.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Okay, fine. Just in terms of, you know, bodies being displayed and all that kind of stuff.
You know,
The Shards seems to be doing that really well.
Sure. Okay. It's very different though.
Have you watched any of The Shards?
No, I have not, Steph.
Okay.
You
would hate that. You shouldn't watch that.
Okay, good to know.
You wouldn't like it.
You might do. You never know.
I don't think so.
Well, it does have, obviously, the whiff of Ryan Murphy about it.
It's got all the things he wouldn't like. I think.
Okay.
Well, we'll see. But anyway, so I am on board with Furious. And that is where I shall leave it. So I've watched the odd one or two things while I've been away.
Jesus Christ, you've watched loads. Well done, you.
Thank you.
Okay. God, we're doing a lot of reverse ferrets lately, aren't we?
We are. But look, we've touched on it. Tell us about your journey through vampiredom.
Okay, so I spoke a little bit about this before when I'd watched the first episode. So yeah, I have received, like I said, I'm in the midst of a vampiric backlash. Like, I have never, ever known before. I can't believe, like, how many people are so angry about this show. And whilst, like I said, you know, the many expletives I try not to take notice of, but what I do take note of is when there are impassioned pleas about something, and actually this is really good and this is why. And I took note of those. And I was like, right, I don't want to miss out on a show that I would potentially think is incredible. And so when I watched the first episode, and I said it when we recorded before, I really thought it was exquisite. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. Everything about it, the way it was shot, the story, the timeline of the story, loved it. You know, the whole Jim Crow era, it spoke to me on lots of levels. What I would say, now I've boxed off season 1, is the whole way through, Lestat is a toxic, horrendous character, right?
Yes.
He is, and he's supposed to be, of course. But because I'm so in love with Louis, right? I'm so desperately in love with Jacob Antonon. I want all good things for him because he's so amazing. But since you told me that he is an unreliable narrator and you're only seeing it through his eyes from this, it's made me, maybe part of me knows too much. So the whole way through, I'm like, oh God, I love Louis. I just want good things for him. Everything that's brought him to this point, you know, even when he had to become a vampire, and it was just because he was trying to do the right thing. And when he had to kill that, you know, that racist guy, you know, his motivation always is for goodness. And now I'm worried that in season 2, it's all going to unravel and I'm going to find out actually he's a horrible person because it was...
No, you're not.
Okay, good. So, yeah. Bailey Bass is unbelievable as Claudia.
Don't get attached to her.
Oh.
Claudia gets recast in season 2.
No.
Yeah, everyone knows that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, no, because I don't know. This is my big thing about this. And I honestly, if it was possible to blame something on you 1,000%, obviously that's not mathematically possible, but I would blame you because you absolutely cannot judge Lestat, I don't think, without having, and what lots of people said, like, you can't without having watched these first two. And I really do feel that
now. But
it's
a very different show, though, as we've established.
Right.
The point is,
my big point about this, right? And all the massive criticism, right? Having now watched this first season, which is brilliant, and had we reviewed this, I would have been going, God, this is a great show, and this is really right on my street, and it's compelling, and it's gripping, and everything about it is immersive, and you really care about the characters, and you really hate Lestat. Well, I do. I hate Lestat. Now I'm really even more, I feel disappointed that I'm going to watch season 2 and get to the point where, you know, now I know what happens in season 3, which is renamed. It feels like they've ruined it. It feels like, for me, what I'm watching at the moment compared is night and day to what I watched, and it feels like they're going to ruin something that I am really enjoying at the moment.
Well, I don't think they're going to necessarily should ruin it, but it is a completely different type of show.
Yeah,
and I have watched a couple more episodes of The Vampire Lestat, and I have to say, and I've also had a lot of DMs from people saying, by the way, essentially, you're right, saying that you're right, Steph.
No.
And saying that seasons one and two are brilliant, but season three goes off the rails.
It was definitely going to be divisive, though, because it's such a hard left turn.
A lot of people think it's gone off the rails for the third season. I watched the third episode is an overwrought mess. I'm sorry.
Okay.
It is... I thought it was terrible. I thought it was like Ryan Murphy at his worst, actually.
Really?
There's a Murphy-esque quality to this.
You know there is.
Yeah.
And it's got... another terrible song. It's got my complaint about the music is I know he's supposed to be he's just acquiring his talent or whatever in the first few episodes, but they show us entire songs, terrible songs. We get the idea. We don't need to see the whole fucking song to underline the fact that he's now becoming a pop star and he's not that good. Then eventually he'll get good. Fine. Anyway, that's a mind. The third episode of music really annoyed me. It's so overwrought. It's like Ken Russell is worse. It's like it's and Ryan Murphy, and that's so much going on, and people are shouting.
Issue.
It's one of the shouting.
Volume.
You know, I've got a thing about shouting. This is one of the shoutiest single episodes of a TV show I've ever seen. They're all screaming at each other, and I know they're all bloodletting, and they're all But if you watch episode three, that's my comment.
Can I ask you a question about this? What I don't understand is because. From everything I've seen in this season, this is a beautifully crafted show, right? Interview with Vampire is beautiful, okay? The performances are incredible. Sam Reed is...
It looks incredible. The money's there on the screen. It looks like it's a huge budget show. I mean, even more now with the new...
So what's happened? I don't understand it. And I know, obviously, some people are really loving it. Why would they do this pivot? What is that all about?
Well, it's presumably in the original books.
Because of the books. No.
But he is a rock star, isn't he?
He is, and the framing device is he's a rock star. So yes, that is not pulled out of nowhere. But the books are not wildly dissimilar in terms of it's a chronology, it's a history book.
Right.
It's Lestat recounting his history, and you go from him as a boy to him being made a vampire by Magnus and all the various stuff that goes on, and then it leads into Queen of the Damned, which is kind of the continuation of that story, and it goes into the present day. But it is another... really expansive, immersive history. And I can only assume one of the reasons they didn't want to do that is because they'd already done it and they didn't want to repeat what they'd done previously.
He is telling the story. They've still got that device on video, isn't he? That's what we've shown.
I do. And it's just Jacob Anderson is just so alluring.
He is the shining light this third for me, because he's still in it and he's more on the edge of the action. But like in episode three, you see he goes to this diner and meets this thing. And his stuff is still great and he is brilliant. I agree.
The only thing is, I was like, why didn't they burn the body? Like when they, in season one, I mean, that's just silly. But then I was like, oh, because he's so deep, he's deeply in love with him, really. And this toxic love story.
Yeah, it's a whole
can't.
Coercive, controlling relationship, isn't it? Like it's mad. But I think it's also, it'd be an interesting pivot to go for that. Would that have even worked? Because like the way Lestat, because when Anne Rice wrote Interview with the Vampire, she was Louis. Like, he was her perspective character.
Yeah.
She was embodied in him. And then she became more enamored with Lestat and she ended up doing, like the whole Vampire Lestat. And Lestat then became her avatar from then on. Like, she fell in love with Lestat while writing the Vampire
Lestat. He's an abomination. It's horrible.
Well, and this is why the Vampire Lestat kind of almost retcons that character. Like, it's a big redemption for him.
And you also see characters that are worse than him that make him look much worse.
Like, Louis is, Louis is slightly mopey and dramatic, but, he is a sympathetic character, although I would argue he's a very different character in the books. Like, he's a plantation owner, he keeps slaves, like, it's not set during the same period as the TV show. Whereas Lestat is the brat prince. Like, yes, he is a narcissist, he's self-absorbed, like, he's a pain in the arse, but there's something very charismatic and appealing about him, and I think that comes out in the Vampire Lestat. And I think it comes out a little bit in the show as well. Like, he is deluded and he is like the most unreliable of narrators. And he is childish and puerile and petty and all of these things. But Sam Reed is so fucking good in that role.
Oh, he's unbelievable.
That you're obsessed with him.
Yeah,
you're captivated
by him. He's really good. Look, right. Yes. Let's go over it again. Yes. I just watched that first episode but he is great in the season one. So just give me ballpark. How many emails do you think we've had where people are trying to kill me? About 50? It's more than that, isn't it?
Oh, it's like so many people listening. That's good.
Yeah. I'm impressed. Do you know what? What a silver lining.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
How many would you say, James, emails that we've had?
Email? I don't know. Like we've a dozen or two. Like a few. We've had a few. Wow, but to be fair, some of them have actually been very measured and balanced. There were just lots of people. The large consensus was, we think you're wrong, give it another go. Or we're quite cross that you're wrong, give it another go. That's the broad.
Okay. Well, I've righted that wrong, if it is a terrible wrong. And I would like to not receive any more messages about Vampire Lestat and how much people hate me. Thank you so much.
Did you watch anything else?
No, that's what I've watched. Okay,
fair enough. Yeah. Apart from episodes 3 and 4 of Vampire Lestat that I watched, but, you know, purely by accident last night, because they were on BBC Two live last night quite late, like 11 o'clock. I was like, oh, okay, I'll watch these then. And 3 is a piece of work, isn't it? You know I'm talking about episode 3.
I'm trying to remember, like, because I watched them all kind of back to back. So
there's an act of kind of sexual violence in it.
Oh, yes, I do know what you're referring to.
Yes. Anyway, I have been watching Sterling Point.
Oh, do you know
which
what?
We okay. neglected to review because it was the week where there were like 4 shows possible to do and only 3 slots.
And we watched Hit Point instead.
We did Hit Point, yeah. Another show with the word point in the title, which I like. I like Hit Point. But Sterling Point, I think we'd all like much more than we would expect. Sterling Point is the latest in what is an extraordinarily long line of Prime Video's teen dramas.
Is it an off-campus?
It's joining the list of off-campus, and, you know, they're literally... But Prime Video is now, like, old bloke crime.
Dadcore,
Reacher, yeah, etc., which we dissected in the last episode of Plus, by the way, and teen stuff. And this is... It's kind of like... It's not like off-campus. It's much more... This is like an indie teen drama. Ooh. It's 8 episodes and everything. Kind of, that seems to be the set length now for Prime Video, by the way. You can't make anything that's 6 or 10. It has to be 8 episodes. Anyway, which often does not produce a decent enough story. This is a very kind of deliberately quirky, but not in an annoying way, indie-flavoured attempt to do a teen drama. And it's really clever and smart. And it's all about this young woman, these 2 adopted twins.
Yeah,
boy
so
and
I
a girl.
Watched like 8 minutes of it before.
Yeah, they're
said
like 17, yeah. Going on 18. And their dad, played by J.G. Plass, who is one of the darlings, of course, of American indie cinema, it turns out that they've been left in the will of their grandfather an entire Canadian island, a small Canadian island.
Yeah.
And she finds out about this kind of by stealth, because he doesn't want them to know for some reason,
the
father.
The dad doesn't want them to know, right,
okay. And not only that, she finds out, this is all in the first 10, 15 minutes, she finds out that he's been keeping communications from this grandfather to the kids away from them. He hasn't let them see them over like decades.
Because,
and there's this big mystery.
But
He's the adopted grandfather. Yeah. So there's this whole. So that's the setup. So she goes off without telling her dad, lying to her dad about she's got a brilliant gay boyfriend who hasn't yet.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
Which
that
is funny. Handled hilariously, by the way, and because he's so.
Because she says, "I'm gonna when he comes out to himself, then I'm gonna break up with him. But
exactly,
until then, we'll just keep going with it." Yeah.
And she lies and tells her dad that she's gone off with him to his trip to Thailand. He wants to go to Thailand without her. That's a brilliant scene. There's a brilliant scene where she's like, "I'll come to Thailand with you." And he's like, "Oh, will you?" And they're like, he doesn't want to because he wants to live out his gay life in Thailand. Anyway, it's really smart. The script is brilliant. The acting, she is phenomenal. The main woman, who is Ella Rubin, playing Annie Jacobson. And all of the kind of milieu, if I can use that word, she meets the guy who kind of takes her on a private plane to the island from the mainland, is immediately this hot young guy.
Oh,
sensitive.
Oh,
hot guy. He's very off campus.
Right, okay.
You will love him. You'll fall in love with him after 10
God,
seconds.
Definitely going to watch this.
And then there's another rich family who are there, who she has connections to, and she goes to this big party. But to cut a long story short, it's really, really good.
Okay.
It's like, you know, it's kind of not as, in a way, off-campus is quite a mainstream kind of thing, but with all the raunch. It's not as raunchy as that. Certainly not in the first couple of episodes that I've watched. But it's still dealing with very much present-day sexuality, gender issues and all of that. And the intrinsic story is really interesting as well. The mystery of why did the dad not want his kids to know about their kind of grandfather figure. So... It's really good. And then the final thing that I have to say I saw, because I know this will make James extremely jealous, is I went to the production of Game of Thrones, The Mad King, at Stratford-upon-Avon at the weekend. This is the stage drama.
Didn't invite me.
I wasn't given a plus one.
No, it's fine.
Wasn't given a plus one. I was reviewing it for Radio 4, so they couldn't afford to give me a plus one. It's extraordinary, yeah. So this is this four-hour, including a 20-minute interval, but four-hour play set kind of about 15 to 20 years before the events of Game of Thrones, for the first season of Game of Thrones.
Where is it in A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, though? Where is
post
it in
all that?
Post all that.
Post House of the Dragon.
Yeah, okay. Those are like hundreds of years ago, aren't they?
No, I know.
100
yeah.
years ago prequels. This is a 10 to 15-year prequel.
Okay.
So it's kind of establishing what happened to and why the characters we know,
it's
like
Eris the Mad King, isn't it?
Yeah, mm-hmm. He's the Mad King. The Mad King is fantastic. It's just really beautifully done. It's kind of epic as it can be on stage. I was worried, like, how are they going to transfer, you know, the Game of Thrones epicness to a stage? But there's this cross. It's the stage is set like a cross. They've reconfigured the whole seating arrangement. Oh. It is the way they do puppeteering of the horses and the dragon, a dragon, is brilliantly done. It's just, if you like Game of Thrones, it is fucking incredible.
Oh, we should go.
Yeah, would have been nice if Porter brought us. Really,
I did not get plus one, or let alone a plus two.
Mm-hmm.
It's all sold out anyway.
Maybe me and Steph will go and see it.
It will end up, it's only at Stratford-upon-Avon now. It's only running for about another 8 weeks, I think, but it will definitely come to the West End. It will go to Broadway. They'll make a film of it. It'll be a phenomenon.
Oh, amazing. Oh, hooray, hooray, hooray.
So that is what I've been watching, which is actually a live play.
Okay,
right. That is it for what we have been watching. And now we're going to do something ever so slightly different. Now, those of you who listen to this podcast and have been for a long time will know that we have a certain blind spot when it comes to animation. And anyone who subscribes to Pilot TV Plus, and if you don't, why don't you? You will know that we have been taking steps to remedy this issue. So we've had this animation intervention thing going on where people have been sending us things that they want us to watch. But the thing is, we're just not qualified to judge because we are animation Luddites. We don't really know what we're talking about. We don't really know what we're doing. So I have called in a ringer. A ringer to solve this conundrum for us. So essentially, here in this very studio with us here is John McEwen White. Hello, John. How are you?
Hi.
Now, we should say you are a Pilot Plus subscriber. The reason you're here, of course, is what your subscription pays for. You get to come on the podcast.
Yeah.
But crucially, you are also an award-winning writer and producer and, crucially, founder of an animation production company.
Yeah.
So you are a quote unquote professional.
Wow, you're like the best person in here.
Yes.
It's not difficult, but yeah.
Also, could we just say props to John for coming back? Because John's last time in this studio was to do the spoiler special for Foundation Season 3, I want to say. Mm-hmm. And it was entirely derailed by the arrival of one Taylor Swift. And so the spoiler special.
Only 700 times.
Right. Yeah. So the spoiler special was mainly John sitting alone in this studio with Helen while I stalked Taylor Swift around the building.
Oh, God. For an hour.
We can only apologise.
That is so unprofessional.
And I regret nothing.
I came all the way from Scotland.
He did.
And for an hour, he came in every 10 minutes and was like, right, let's get started with the podcast. And he was like, you know what? I'm just going to go outside and I'm just going to wait. And he'd come back and be like,
Believe that Helen was on board with this.
And I returned to Scotland, right? Here's an interesting fact about Taylor Swift, by the way. My wife loves Taylor Swift. She has the same birthday as Taylor Swift, December 13th. I have the same birthday as Travis. What's his name?
Kelsey,
5th of October.
Is that not a bit weird?
That's why James has got you on the podcast.
Yeah, that's the only reason.
But yeah, I returned and my wife was like, why on earth didn't you go out and see Taylor Swift?
Yeah, especially as he was out.
And me and Helen were too cool. Me and Helen
they were
a
too
really
cool.
Nice
they bonded over Foundation while I went and saw Taylor Swift.
But James was so desperate to find someone to talk about Foundation that he kind of kidnaps you from your life.
I offered my services.
That is where you went wrong.
Yeah.
So you have history with the podcast, obviously.
Yes.
Not a positive experience, explained.
Locked in a room with Helen O'Hara is not the worst experience.
No, that
in
is
the world.
Exactly
well,
not.
But it's Boyd's idea of heaven. Yeah.
I would just say, James, that I am building quite the dossier of monstrous behaviour from you, okay?
Monstrous.
And this is going in,
monstrous.
All right?
Yeah, again.
Unrepentant. And I have two children. And they were crying when I came home.
Did you send them the video of Taylor Swift waving at me to make them feel better?
Do you want to hear something else that's funny?
Yes.
My wife's best friend, right?
Yeah.
She's a fantastic doctor. And she sent my wife the video that you took.
Excellent.
Because it went like viral.
Yeah.
Well,
and I got in trouble for it, but that's neither here nor there.
Yes, let's not mention that again.
Anyway, we have derailed the podcast, as is our wont, but John is here to educate us in the animated arts. Now, so we have fed a lot of your listener contributions of things we should watch to John, and John, with his expert eye, has looked through them, and... Mm-hmm. So, John, how are you going to do this? Because, you know, we do have a problem here. I think we can all admit we have an issue with animation.
I just really, really resent you constantly. Yeah. You're like, you two, okay, like pulling me into your gang of animator haters.
Okay, look, right. And I know I'm a TV snob, right? But when you say I'm into animation, I don't think Danger Mouse counts.
Okay, does Thundercat count? Thundercats count?
Thundercats.
I love animation.
Yeah.
I've never stopped loving animation since I was younger.
Mm. So you seem to be nodding here, John. So are you validating this type
of
animation?
I'm validating Steph. Right, Steph is always very polite about animation.
Yes.
And, I'll get into what we're doing.
Okay.
I want to report on, or I want to respond to something that happened in the 400th episode.
Oh, okay. Good. I wasn't here. This is Thundercats.
Which is like a legend. Like, that's a piece of history. Like, that'll be recorded and I'd be on the moon and stuff like that.
Yeah.
To quote, on the 400th episode, Boyd, that you knew that this was coming and you now work with me technically.
Yeah.
So you'd think you'd be nicer about this.
Yeah.
At one point, this being about Ali Katz, Kay says, I'm not really into animation.
She says,
who is?
And what do I say?
And I think you probably said something lovely like, animation's great.
Yeah. Steph went, that's old. Shush.
Yeah.
I was saying that ironically to comment with an arched eyebrow on my history of not wording animation fans.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what it was, an illusion.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what's even worse about that? Is because I listened back to the episode and you said, and I was the one who was saying, the animation's so beautiful, it makes me feel at home. I absolutely love it. And then later on, you say, you were going, and as you say, Kay, the animation is beautiful. And I was like, wow.
You are interchangeable, to be fair.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
You are. Yeah, because Kay is not entirely an animation fan either. So you are the, you're the one who flies
animation.
The flag.
I mean, I would say Kay's neutral.
She's neutral.
Positive.
Yeah. I think she is. I think if she saw some really good animation, she'd be like, you know, she would be able to enjoy it. But she's not like me. She's not going to watch, you know, American Dad or Family
Absolutely
Guy. She
not,
doesn't like that.
No.
Okay. I think that's fair. Because I think, like, animation, but as we said, animation is not a genre, it's a medium, right? This is a thing, isn't it? And which is what you're about. I'm taking the words out of your mouth. Go on, John, hit us with it.
I guess so. Like, animation isn't a genre or a medium or whatever. It's just, like, animation is just another thing. Like, there's so many ways you can explain what animation is. You could call it, like, another camera when you're making things. There's lots of documentaries that have animation in them as well. Like, I think it's easier to animate now. With kind of not necessarily the AI side of things, but with technology that is kind of much more advanced. Like, look at Flow, which is a film that won an Oscar.
When they tried to call me out and they were like, you don't love animation, tell us the last thing you thought was amazing. I was like, Flow. And they went, oh, okay.
Yeah. And Flow is, and there's so much nice stuff. I think you just kind of have to get over it.
You two get over it.
Yeah. It's like saying, I don't watch Scottish shows. And there's
I think we can all agree we don't watch Scottish
Pretty much
shows,
any so. Example you're about to say there, if I don't watch, could be applied to James.
Yeah.
Including Scottish shows, generally.
Well, there's loads of things that are shot in Scotland. Like, you know the Spider-Man movie was shot in Scotland, by the way?
Was it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Or the Odyssey was shot in Scotland?
Yeah.
FYI, Scotland. The place to be.
Right.
Just to confirm, John is Scottish.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah, I'm also Scottish. This is actually my notes.
Yeah. Which we are working together on the Edinburgh TV Festival event, which is, by the way, 2 weeks today.
It is.
Horrifyingly.
But we'll be fine.
Are you going, Boydie?
Yes, I am hosting.
I hope so.
I was going to say, we were offered some interviews up there. So
is one of them with Boyd? Wow.
Yes, actually, yes. Would you like to speak to you, Boyd Hilton of the Planet TV podcast?
Yes.
Animation interviews?
Perhaps. Who knows? An animated interview might be the way to go.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Scottish. Scotland is good. It's okay if you don't know if something is Inverness.
Oh, are you going to
flash?
It's not really.
Okay. Right.
Yeah. Are these going to be exclusively Scottish animations
you recommend for us? No. Okay. Do you want me to talk through my plan?
Well, first of all, I would like us to individually sort of explain ourselves. So, Boydie, why are you an animation twat? Go on, explain.
Animation twat, okay.
Yes.
I think I would describe it as, There's loads of great animation that I love. So the Into the Spider-Verse, those films.
Okay, film.
Beautiful. Two of them.
Okay.
Two films. Two films. The Simpsons at its height, you know, I was, of course, watched it fairly religiously.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up watching the Flintstones and, you know.
Flintstones? Really?
It's animated, John.
Oh, my God.
So I'm not intrinsic. What I'm saying is I'm loads of great animated films, yeah. I think I'm not a big fan of, you know, the should we say, modern day rude, you know, the cheeky, rude adult animation.
Get that, shows. And I can speak about that.
Family Guy, etc.
Same, yeah.
Ren and Stimpy, you know, going back.
That's definitely like 20.
I am an old man. You know,
I'm look very aged. Young, boy.
Thank you. So that stuff, so the kind of, there was The Simpsons, which I think, which is, you know, one of the great shows of all time. And then all the other things that came afterwards, I wasn't particularly into. But in essentially, it comes down to, I have to watch everything. I watch all new shows in most genres, partly for this podcast, but partly for my day job, writing for Heat and Empire, etc. And I just, my honest taste is for live action stuff. So I'll always gravitate more to live action than I do animation in general. So it's an apologia for me, really, that I know that is inane and stupid of me, but I just, for some reason, you know, even The Simpsons, I was like, wouldn't this be better if it was actually live action? You know, it's insane. But my honest response is, for some reason, I'm much more attracted towards live action than I am animation. And I apologize for that, but it is the case. If you gave me 20 shows to review and 10 of them were animated and 10 of them were live action, there's no way I'm going to go to the animated side of that divide. It's like that, really.
I was hoping you'd be a little bit more of a dickhead there, so I could fight.
Yeah.
But that's like very fair points and very fair reasons.
But still
reasons.
Small-minded of me, you know.
I think what is happening right now that I'm seeing from within the industry is there is a massive change in animation. And when you talk about adult animation, so that's like rejects. When I mention, if I'm working on an adult animation project and I mention that to my granny, she thinks I'm working on
porn.
Yeah, to try and explain that to her.
But your granny thinks you're working on adult animated porn.
Obviously, if you say I'm working on an adult animation, then
she'll
be
like, what? And then I'll have to be like, whoa. I won't let her think that.
Okay, good.
I'll correct her quickly.
Okay, fine.
And there is some adult animation that is borderline porn. Felix the Cat, if we go back, I think.
The advert?
No, this is going back decades. Okay. There was a period where they made kind of like very adult animation
What is
films.
Happening?
Sorry. Yeah, you look at, Google it, have a look. Yeah.
I mean, that's getting a number crunch.
Like Ralph Bakshi, do you know Ralph Bakshi? Have you heard of Ralph Bakshi?
Yeah.
Ralph, this is my history of animation for you. So Ralph Bakshi was a very famous animated film director back in the day. I'm talking like 70s, 80s, and he did this thing called Felix that was very rude, cheap, saucy, and I think it was X-rated. He also did the version of Lord of the Rings, James. You must know about this. And I went to see that in the cinema.
With Leonard Nimoy singing the song to it or something.
Right,
like
I think
that.
So, yeah. And it was awful. And I think that might have scarred me in my history.
Yeah, it could be.
Because it's a terrible, terrible version of Lord of the Rings.
But what I'm saying
anyway.
Just quickly on that, right, then, because I know you're saying something maybe just as nice, which is very lovely. But what I'd say is adult animation within the industry, they're massively changing. When they say adult animation, really what they're actually aiming for is 16 to 24 males. Like that's actually what the demographic is,
that
even though they're saying. So they're really working hard to go beyond that because there's this massive wealth of people that could get into it, but they need to move on from, like, I love Rick and Morty, but my wife will never watch it because Rick has a little bit of sick on his mouth. And Rick and Morty is a project that was made, I believe, at a time when we were a little bit more comfortable with the world or the world wasn't as scary. So it could be nihilistically, endlessly nihilistic. And I think what we're seeing right now is there's a lot more shows that actually like mean stuff and matter and aren't just like classic animation. Yeah. And I think more creators are getting involved. Like Richard Linklater did a really interesting project on Netflix called Apollo 11 or Apollo 13, massively worth a watch. And that goes to show like that's a fantastic live action animator. Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio. These are all movies. But what I'm saying is,
we discuss movies. We love talking about movies.
We love talking about movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The more creatives, I'm seeing a lot more creatives see animation as an opportunity to basically spread their canvas.
Yes.
And it's nice to see that.
Right, Steph, we've established you are just a fan of animation across the board. So that's
Well, no, I would just say the thing is that I don't like to exclude anything from. I just think, you know, I'm very much on just entertainment is entertainment, whatever form it comes in. So that's where I sit with anything like that. And Alley Cats is a great example of that.
Is it?
James, look, we've spent 2 weeks apart and I want us to come back together and be the best friends that we are. Okay?
Of course, carry on.
No, so I just feel like...
You're just an open-minded person.
Well, no, but just think if it's entertaining, in whatever form, it's entertaining and you can enjoy it.
Yeah.
If the script is good, it'll be enjoyable. It doesn't matter if it's a fucking animated cat or, you know, it doesn't... I don't know, that's just where... But maybe that's a very simplistic view.
No, I would argue that's probably the way most people should approach entertainment, where you shouldn't be alienated by the form. You should appreciate it for what it is. I wish I could be more like that. I struggle with that a little bit. Because let's discount the Seth MacFarlane oeuvre, because I think there's as you say, I think the kind of quote-unquote adult animation thing, there is a smug... to it, and then they're slightly irritating, and I think that transcends the animated medium, and they have a vibe that just doesn't work for me.
Yeah,
one that was good. So I just remembered one that I did. BoJack Horseman was good.
Yeah, and BoJack Horseman, I had stopped watching because it was too sad.
Yeah, it's meant to
be like a silly comedy.
Yeah, that went quite dark.
There's a beautiful episode of BoJack Horseman about his mum dealing with Alzheimer's.
Right,
and they use animation to squiggle out people's faces.
Yeah.
That is a way of using animation to increase your storytelling abilities as opposed to just saying this is going to be animation. And also you can get into like budget, and like it's much easier to shoot a space battle with animation than it is to actually shoot a space battle. There's not that many space battles that we know of.
But you didn't even like BoJack Horseman, did you?
I didn't know.
No.
Okay. So explain yourself. What's your problem?
I think there are a number of aspects to it. I think part of it comes down to the way I kind of watch things, which is like I need to be immersed in it. I need to be completely consumed by it. Like I live it. Like I project into things. So it's pure escapism for me. I'm never kind of sitting on a sofa watching it. And if I am, then there's something's gone wrong because I should be in the story when I'm watching it. And I find the animated medium sometimes a barrier to that. In the same way I find like comedy that breaks its own rules also pulls me out of the story a little bit. And I think there are two reasons for it. I think sometimes it's just, I was going to say bad animation, but actually I think that's a slightly ignorant way of looking at it. I think it's simplistic. So you take Invincible, right? So it uses a very simplistic style of art, right? The animation itself is not the issue, it's the art style. And because it's very simplistic, and that's a stylistic choice, I find that hard to get into because I just see, you know...
So this is an access issue for you?
A little bit. But also, I don't like, and I've talked about this before, animation voices, where...
I love an animation voice.
X-Men 97, right? People don't talk like that. That's just not how people speak. Because it's these incredibly overblown, over-egged, animated voice that they put on. And again, it takes me out of the story because there's no verite to it. Like, it doesn't feel real to me.
You know what you would love? Alley Cat.
I was going to say, absolutely, yeah, because they are very naturalistic conversations.
Yeah, I'm hoping he's watched. I asked him to watch.
Have you watched Alley
Cat? I'm hoping he has.
Be honest, John. Ricky Gervais to be my friend.
Okay, fair enough.
No, I watch it. It's fine. It's good. It's like, it is like...
Sorry, I'll put you on the spot here.
A podcast with his friends that he animated.
Yes, which is how he describes it.
I think maybe... I feel like people are being a bit too mean about it.
Right, so do I.
I think like... there's probably things out there that are much worse than that.
Oh, gotcha.
And I think as well, what I get annoyed is that people are like, he... just decided to do animation. He doesn't know anything about animation. He's actually has done animation more than most people have.
Yeah. In fact, he did the Ricky Gervais Show, which was animated conversations with Carl Pilkington and Stephen Merchant back in the day. Yeah.
Honestly, that was, I loved that. I thought that was very inspiring.
Yeah,
the animation was really cool there. And it seems so obvious now, like you animate a podcast, but that was, I think that was good.
Yeah.
So that's what I have to say about Alley Cats.
Okay. Very deftly handled. Anyway, the point of this is we all, for our various wrong-headed reasons, Steph not included, fail to access this medium for one reason or another. And John is going to fix us, aren't you, John?
Yeah.
Tell us how you're going to do that.
Okay, so I'm going to quickly, really quickly run through the list that you got. because everyone deserves a voice. Okay. I'm not going to speak. I'm just going to mention the shows. Okay, so there was loads of amazing suggestions, brilliant suggestions by very talented people. There was too much to go into.
There was too much.
Also,
yes.
What was the majority of them were quite well-known ones that you guys probably know of or have seen or tried to watch or something like that. So there's a few like, yes, Samurai Jack's fantastic. Bob's Burgers is great. The Batman animated series is fantastic. There's a new Batman animated series on Amazon, which is actually very, very good. And it's worth a watch. So Arcane, you've watched already. We've spoken about BoJack. Fantastic. And Blue Eye Samurai is amazing.
Yes. And Blue Eye Samurai and Arcane, to be fair, I didn't finish Blue Eye Samurai, but I did finish Arcane both seasons and loved it to bits.
Yeah. So. Like Blue Eye Samurai, you definitely need to finish Blue Eye Samurai. What are you doing?
I know, I got distracted, but I was really enjoying it while I was watching it.
So I also thought I'd throw in, someone mentioned Wolf King.
Yes, mentioned Wolf King because I love that style at the moment.
Wolf King is a beautiful style.
Yeah.
Beautiful story.
It really
very well
is.
Told. Here's an interesting fact. Made by the people that make Hollyoaks.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Wow. That's why Steph likes it.
Yeah.
Is that ostensibly a kid's show or
like YA?
It is.
But it's more than that.
But it is more than that. It is very good. Like you can really immerse yourself in Wolf King.
Yeah. That was maybe gonna be the recommendation for you, but I think you'd be like it's a kid's show, blah blah blah.
It's not though.
But I feel John May maybe not a million miles away from that. Maybe my reaction.
Okay, I'm just saying it's really good.
And then, so this is just worth throwing in. Disney Plus did a really, really cool show called Iwahu, which is made by an African animation studio. And it was based off this African animation studio was interviewed by BBC and they said, we want to kick Disney in the ass. And Disney said, let's have a conversation. And it was Walt Disney Animation, their only ever TV show they've ever made. And it's really, really good. It didn't do huge numbers, but it's good. Again, possibly thinking about James, but he'd be like, it's a kid's show. I don't want to watch it.
What is wrong with you?
What is wrong with you, James?
I mean,
he didn't say any of this.
I know, but we probably will.
You're inherently right.
Yeah. I probably would.
Yeah. And then finally, Marvel's What If. Have you watched that?
I watched the whole of season one, yes.
Marvel's What If is like the MCU you want more of, and it just gives you more of. It's amazing. It's so good.
Unfortunately, and this probably speaks to my whole problem, my main takeaway from that is, why isn't this live action?
Because they couldn't afford live
action. Of course,
action.
And I know that's the answer.
they couldn't
get all the actors.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really matter if you're just using people doing their voices. But,
it gets better. And see, like, Shang-Chi, who hasn't been in the Marvel for ages, Shang-Chi's, like, a huge part of the Marvel What If universe. It's really worth it.
You could also say something along the lines of, Avatar is an animated movie, right?
Exactly.
And I love Avatar.
Yeah.
But then you get to the point which I think, but you're just wrong. But,
I almost spent £30 on an Avatar tin that my friend, popcorn tin.
Avatar tin. Oh, the popcorn bucket. Tin. Okay.
Yeah, lit up.
Fair
my friend didn't let me go.
But again, it's about visuals. And one of the reasons I loved Arcane is because it's so stunning to look at that it elevates it for me.
And just to flag about Arcane, right, that is a very much a rarity in that usually you go to a company and you say, here's my idea for a show, and they say, here's some money, or here's all the money, go and make the show. Arcane went to Netflix pretty much, and they were the gaming company that's in charge, I can't remember who's in League of Legends.
Riot Games, League of Legends,
We're like, we're going to make a thing, and here it is. It's the most expensive animated show ever made. I'm pretty sure it still is.
It looks like it.
You could not make that. It's an advert for a game. That's the only way you get it. So Arcane is brilliant and fantastic, but you got to stop saying that that's your reference point because it's almost impossible to make stuff.
I like it when he's told off.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You've got to stop saying that's your reference point.
Oh, move on. Arcane. Yeah.
I've peaked. I've started with the best. What can I say?
Yeah, it is the best. And it shows you have taste. So that's a good thing.
Well.
Right, so the three modern essentials, I would say Blue Eye Samurai, Bluey, and Arcane. I've just said don't reference Arcane, but those are the three ones that are great.
Yeah.
But, okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give everyone a tailored animation recommendation.
Wow.
Okay?
Oh my God, this is so exciting. Yeah.
Maximum 30 minutes of watching, okay? And if you don't want to go
I'm already on board.
Minutes, you're done. and I've got, so I'll start with K.
Yes, okay. K.
Right?
K.
And some of these, I think we can have open discussions and we can pitch in and we can maybe change because there's some, basically I think I can convert Boyd, you're converted, if James were trying to take down here.
Why are you always the problem?
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. You're the problem, it's you.
It is.
Taylor
Swift. It's me.
Yeah. That's the Taylor Swift word. Yeah. Okay, right. K. I would recommend for her, Pixar has made two TV series. One is an Inside Out spin-off, which is really, really good and very, very moving and brilliant. But that was clearly like Disney were like, make a spin-off to something you know. If Pixar were to make a TV show, they'd make their own thing. And it's called Win or Lose.
Oh my God, I love Win or Lose. It is so good.
Did you review it?
We did review it. I can't remember whether Kay was on when we did it.
I love Win or Lose so much that I've rewatched it twice. It's so good.
It's so good. And it's like got the quality of Pixar.
It's emotional.
It's so emotional.
Oh God.
Did it make you cry?
I mean, Steph's already converted, right?
Of course it made me cry. It was so beautiful. When he's like, just the whole love
story.
The love story.
That's the one I was going to speak about. The love story. And you see inside his head and he's so small.
I know.
It's so sad.
And you just want for him so much. I'm like, I'm dying.
What is it about? I've forgotten it.
It's like a softball league. Right? Softball, which is a thing in America.
Yeah.
I think it's like Rounders.
Yeah, exactly.
Softball league, and every episode follows a different member of the team.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
But like, that's like the basic concept. But what's really good is it's looking at basically like feelings and anxieties.
Human connections. It's just so special.
And even though some are kids, some are adults, but it's like a genuinely very moving idea of we all live in this world and we all feel so alone even though we're surrounded by people. And it looks at the different ways that that can happen, but also uses different styles of animation to show those things. And it's really good. So for Kay, I was going to recommend the love episode.
Yeah, definitely. She'll like that.
Yeah. I can't remember which episode that was.
I'll dig it out.
Yeah. And see. And also Rhea Seehorn.
Ray Seehorn. Friend of the pod.
She voices one of the characters.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. What more do you need?
We're on board.
Okay, Boyd.
Yes.
Right. I feel like I'm Santa. Isn't that very cool?
Yeah.
You know in Narnia when he gives people like...
Turkish delight?
Yeah. No, which that wasn't
Santa. No, who eats Turkish delight?
Yeah. Sick people. Turkish delight.
Sick people.
I think you told me this before and that disgusting. Is so odd.
Do you like licorice as well?
Yeah.
Aniseed balls, Turkish delight.
Do you know the worst thing? The only alcohol I genuinely like to taste off is Sambuca.
That's genuinely true. That's nuts.
Horrendous monster, that's what we do.
Yeah, you are.
Again, going in the dossier.
Yeah.
Okay, Boyd.
Yes.
This is more risky.
Okay.
But it's very interesting.
Is it that weird cat porn thing that you're talking
about? Yeah. Felix the cat.
Yeah.
No. So you're a very classy guy.
Thanks, man.
He is classy. He's so lovely.
He's prestige.
He is. Do you know what? He's a real... The thing about Boyd is Boyd is such a gentleman.
He is actually a gentleman.
He really is. Okay. Yeah.
He's a true gentleman. Very lovely guy.
Anyway.
But also, you love Doctor Who. You have that secret little sci-fi side of you.
No, it's not so secret, but
it's not so secret. It's out there. Yeah. It's fully out there.
So combine the sci-fi, combine the classy, and combine the uniqueness of you, Boyd. Okay? Tom Hanks has created and starred in his own animated TV show, but it came out like 15 years ago, right? And it's called Electric City. The annoying thing is, Electric City, you basically can't watch it anywhere unless you're in Spain or the US, but...
Spain?
Yeah.
So you're going to Spain,
boy. Come back from Spain.
Yeah, it's on Amazon Prime in Spain for some reason. But you can... I don't know if this is allowed, right? But you can't... All the episodes are on YouTube.
Oh, okay.
Okay? Yeah. And each episode is like 2 to 3 minutes.
Wow.
Right? But Tom Hanks voices characters. There's other famous people in it. It's about kind of it's kind of like, it's a bit of a mystery. It slowly unravels. I think the animation, because it's done in 2D, it kind of ages well. Mm. So it kind of never looks old. And it's about kind of a dystopian society that you can't really understand why they have electricity, but they don't use it a lot. And there's a lot of kind of mystery. And you find out about one of the characters' kind of backstories and you learn about the history of the world. But like Tom Hanks is very good and very talented. Mm. And this is something that I don't think. Yeah. He's a good guy.
Yeah.
If you're listening, Tom, thank you.
He's a regular listener.
Yeah.
What's it called again?
Electric City.
Oh, man, that sounds interesting. Found I've never heard of it.
YouTube.
Never heard of it, yeah.
Watch
wow.
that.
Okay.
But you have to watch 30 minutes of it.
Sure, okay.
And it's really, really cool and really different.
Steph doesn't like post-apocalyptic dystopias, by the way.
Yes, but I love Steph. Animation and I love Tom Hanks, yeah. so I'm going to watch it.
Okay, wow. Yeah.
That's good.
I know it's working already.
Okay, Steph, right? You already like animation.
I do.
So you're fine. Right.
Okay.
But I'm
going to
give you fine. But you're fine. Did you watch Maul, by the way?
I've only watched the first one, Maul Shadow Lord. Yeah. I've only watched the first one, and I thought it was fantastic.
It's different
really
animation
good.
To Clone Wars, by the way.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's not the same. Okay.
It's like more painterly.
I did say that, didn't
did
I?
Say
I did say it was painted on.
Do you know,
like,
is it maybe because you're a woman?
I think it probably is. It's just like, I said that, and
it was internalized misogyny. That's the reason.
It was. Yeah. Anyway, Maul's probably a feminist.
Right. Listen, I'm having my recommendation moment.
I'm going to say, if you're going to pick anyone from the Star Wars universe, but sure, carry on.
So, Steph, you like animation already. So I felt there was anything I would suggest you kind of already know about. Mm. Like, I'm not. So there's a show on BBC iPlayer called Hushabye Lullaby, right? It is for babies.
That's okay.
And preschool
That's
kids.
Fine.
But you're a mum.
I'm a mum.
But also, you get caught up in this busy world and you just need a moment to breathe, you know? And Hushabye Lullaby is one of the most beautiful animation. Like, it is the texture of it, the way that it's made is so fantastically wonderful.
Is it like Patchwork Pals?
But Pet Shop Pals.
Patchwork Pals, Patchwork where they're all on a quilt. To animate, have you not ever seen that?
No,
you've got
I haven't.
Kids, little kids. Oh, you should watch that.
I should.
It's basically, it's a patchwork and it's got all little animals, and every little episode is like 4
Steph's
minutes.
Fired back with her own.
I know. Now you've got homework as well.
Yeah. It's like 4 minutes and the patchwork animals talk to each other.
See, that's cool.
It's really.
And it's all set on like a quilt.
It's on the quilt
thing.
And they have little adventures. It's really beautiful.
I need to watch that. What's it on?
Okay, that's BBC as well.
BBC.
Patchwork Pals.
See, BBC are good at investing in this stuff.
Okay, I'll do that. Okay.
So it's called Hushabye Lullaby. It's 3 minutes. It's made by a fantastic Scottish company. Mm. They're like tiny. They're called Curious Dreamers. And they really tie in both music and sound engineer, but also animation. It's fantastic. But it's all about like a lullaby for kids. But it's really coming. It's only 3 minutes, but it's just like the most soothing thing. And it just shows everything that animation for kids represents.
Okay.
And it's just a little hug for children, but without it being like crap, like Coco Melon, something like that.
Coco Melon.
Coco Melon. Coco Melon has its place. Okay, Coco Melon does have its place.
Mm.
It does, though, because they do some very catchy songs.
They do some catchy songs.
And that's why
songs.
All the kids know the days of the week. So,
Yeah, that's fair.
JJ, he is cute.
I feel like we're getting sidetracked.
Yeah. Sorry, go on.
Here's
sorry.
The big challenge. The
right.
big one.
Okay,
right.
James. Okay.
I'm slightly scared.
Yeah. You should be.
Mm.
So, I feel like I'm already shooting myself in the foot here. But you don't like 2D, so I'm like, you need to find something that's good in 2D. Because nothing is going to match Arcane. Because it's so...
Right.
Like, beautiful.
So you look
saying,
like you're actually in pain,
I'm slightly apprehensive. Mm.
So, you need to watch 2 things, by the way.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. But the first thing is only 15 minutes long.
I can work with that.
Okay, the first thing you're going to watch...
The pinnacle of 2D animation.
The pinnacle. Yeah. The first thing you're going to watch, you're going to treat, because you like film and you love speaking about film on this podcast. You're going to watch... It was one of the recommendations, actually. It's called Primal. Okay?
This rings a bell.
Oh, yeah. I've heard
I can't
that.
Think why.
Yeah. So the guy that made Dexter's Laboratory, Powerpuff Girls, all that kind of stuff, he then wanted to make stuff for adults. And he made this show called Primal, which is about a caveman and a dinosaur that team up in prehistoric world.
Okay.
Right? But the first
raised an eyebrow.
The first episode shows like the absolute beauty of what 2D animation is, which is when you watch it, I know you're like, I don't want to say, I want to get immersed. You can immerse yourself in the fact that the intelligence of how to get the most for your money with like how people move, like there's a beauty in how this 2D animation moves and how these pictures are painted and how you can be immersed in this world that's being created and how it's telling you something that you couldn't do in live action, that it means so much. If you had a man and a CG dinosaur, you'd be like, that CG dinosaur isn't real. But when you have a 2D man and a 2D dinosaur, you're like, yeah, they're real. Goes places you don't expect. It's brutal. but also like it's very beautiful as well.
Okay. And these all seem good things.
And I think you need, and it's only 50 minutes.
Okay.
So you need to give that a chance.
Crucially, okay. That is an important part.
Can I ask you a question? Yes. It's a dinosaur one. Have you watched The Good Dinosaur? Which I've watched so much. I know. Steph. Sorry. I'm so sorry.
Back on track.
That is an animated film, it which is about, beautiful. It's so beautiful.
So, yeah, so
we should
sad.
Do, you know what we should do? We should have our own podcast where I ask you questions about animated things. Yeah. Okay, fine.
And then I'll ask you, because you know stuff about animation as well. Okay. Right. And then the other one.
Okay.
I'd recommend.
The other one.
Now this is a, you play the video games, right?
I do like the video games.
Right? Yeah. So there's another show that's on Netflix that went completely on the radar. It's called, and don't like scrunch your nose up or anything.
He's already like...
the eyebrow is so high.
Scrunching already.
It's called Captain Laserhawk, a Blood Dragon remix.
Whoa. Oh.
That sounds like a title you totally like.
Is this a Far Cry spin-off?
No.
It's not.
Well, it might be. I don't know. I don't know Far Cry. I don't know what far it might be, but I'll explain.
Okay.
So Ubisoft is a big gaming company.
Who make Far Cry, yes.
Okay. That's right, it probably is.
They have loads of different games. Assassin's Creed, Rayman, Far Cry.
Yeah.
Need I go on?
As I recall, there was a kind of weird futuristic punk DLC for one of the Far Cry games, which was Blood Dragon. I was assuming this
That's exactly it. Yeah. But what they've done, it's actually really, really cool. They've taken quite a talented writer and they have taken all these different games and put them in the same world. It's Avengers for video games.
Oh, we love an assembled story.
And like Rayman is a main character in this.
He's not
like
a fan of Rayman, reporter. But okay, that's fine.
But he has like a really dark like story that unravels. The main character is a badass action hero who's gay, which is always good because it's just original, it's different, it's really fun. It's crazy that this exists and no one knows that it exists. And it's got a massive epic world that you can get into. And watch.
Okay.
And that's that.
You can't hate it already. You've got the eyes of
I'm not. I'm not hating on it yet. Okay. I'm prepared to potentially hate it, but I might like it.
Captain Laserhawk and the Blood Dragon remix, and that's on Netflix. That's on Netflix.
That definitely
and
wins the best title of
it. It does. Mm. So K, Win or Lose on Disney Plus.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Boyd, Electric City on YouTube.
Electric City,
Steph, Hushabye Lullaby on BBC iPlayer. James, Captain Laserhawk, a Blood Dragon remix on Netflix, and Primal, which I think is on HBO Max.
Okay.
I love that you've got two things.
That's fine. I will do two things. I am prepared to try both of these things because then it doubles the chance of me liking one.
Yes.
So,
yes,
you know.
Does. That's got a very adult way.
Thank you.
That's very responsible and mature of you.
So, what we're going to do is we are going to watch these things and then we will feed back on a special Pilot Plus episode, which we will put out, and you will find out what we thought of them.
I'm going to give props to you.
John's going to mark us all out of 10 or something for our.
But I hope so. I won't be here. I can do a Zoom.
We're going to do it over our remote Riverside platform. We're going to do a remote record, and we'll parachute you in from Bonnie Scotland.
Bonnie Scotland.
Yes. And you will.
Good plan.
Tell us why we got it wrong.
Yeah, I'm going to give you props for like you know getting into animation and like trying to re-educate.
You should be really proud of yourself.
You should be. John and I are both really pleased that you've come into our world.
Well, I'm trying. Yeah. I'm doing my best, but I can promise nothing.
Okay, that's fine.
I think that's genuine. Yeah. You know? Like, we can't save you.
No. I have to save myself.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, John, thank you very much for coming in and giving us homework, which is an odd thing to say. But yes, we appreciate it. We think it's good.
Fantastic.
And for all of you who listen to this podcast, who are constantly wringing your hands and despairing at our unwillingness to engage with the animated arts, I hope, you know, this shows a willingness if not necessarily a, you know.
And don't worry, podcasters, every week I'll be here giving an hour recommendation.
Well, we'll see. Let's see how we get on with this one. Yeah. Well, John, thank you very much.
Thank you.
To be continued. All right, that was our animation interlude, which went on a little bit longer than I thought it would. So we're actually going to be controversial and skip news this week because, honestly, we will not have time to do reviews if we do. So we're going to go straight into this week's reviews. And first up this week, we have Lanterns on HBO Max, which is a DC comic series about not one, but two Green Lanterns, Carl Chandler's Hal Jordan and Aaron Pierre's John Stewart. However, this is not your average superhero show because it was specifically pitched by DC Supremo James Gunn as True Detective with two Green Lanterns. And this sees sort of outgoing Lantern Hal Jordan, and he's training up a potential replacement in John Stewart. And they visit the scene of a murder in Rushville, Nebraska, one that might have, shall we say, an extraterrestrial component. Boydie! You watched a number of episodes. I know this because you mentioned this recently, that you've been watching lots of episodes of Lanterns.
Did I? Oh.
Yes. You mentioned it on the podcast, you know, what you've been watching segment.
Yes.
So given that you've watched multiple episodes, I'm assuming you liked it.
I think this is one of the best examples of a superhero adaptation from a comic book into a television show. And in fact, the fact that it's co-created by Damon Lindelof, who of course did Watchmen, the TV show. Which is
another truly brilliant comic adaptation.
Yeah. But I think he's hit the nail on the head, because I think I am not particularly aware of the significance of the Green Lantern. I mean, I've seen the previous films, and I'm vaguely aware of what it is. But this really crystallizes the whole idea of there being different Green Lanterns, hence the title Lanterns, and of one older lantern training the new lantern. And it is literally that True Detective meets, what was the other thing that meets?
Well, he just said it's True Detective with two Green Lanterns. Right. That was his pitch.
I mean, that's exactly what it is. But tonally, to use our favourite words, I thought it was really clever and smart, and kind of had a kind of, I don't know, had a more sophisticated tone to it than perhaps some previous shows based on DC comic book characters or any comic book characters. I really enjoyed it. I think the central Carl Chandler is fantastic. There's the grumpy old twat who's reluctantly training Aaron Pierre's John Stewart. I know that Steph is a huge fan of Aaron Pierre. She's very excited about the fact that I think we're interviewing him soon, hopefully.
You're interviewing him, aren't you?
On Tuesday.
Yeah.
If you could take her along, she'll be your technical support. But they're both fantastic together. They've got real chemistry. It's really funny. It looks amazing. Like the first episode begins with a spectacular kind of action sequence that's brilliantly handled. And all the way through, though, he's kind of constantly going, it's aliens, it's aliens, it's aliens, and no one believes it. And then when it turns out, that's really well done as well. Mm-hmm. So you kind of, all the way through, it's making it feel kind of authentic and believable, even though it's telling a wild story, really. So I absolutely loved it. Yeah. Thought it was brilliant.
Steph.
Oh, it's sensational. It's so brilliant. I mean, I'm just going to hold my hands up. I'm a Marvel girl. I'm very much a Marvel girl.
I mean, I'm also a Marvel girl.
And I don't stray too far from Marvel. I'm not really into the DC universe, but God, this is like righting all the wrongs of Ryan Reynolds' Green Lantern horror show. The chemistry is there. Aaron Pierre is just brilliant as the straight man. I love the whole idea of the literal passing of the torch. It's really funny. Everything you said is sophisticated, the way it shows, but it is like True Detective with superheroes. Yeah. I love Kelly MacDonald.
Oh, she's brilliant.
She's so good in it.
Sometimes very Scottish, but still, we forgive her.
I totally forgive her.
She's got like a southern accent.
She's got a strange accent. But I think that adds to the humour, and love her sheriff character. Yeah. So this is an absolute triumph. So Chris Mundy, who's writer, showrunner on it, this is an absolute triumph. This is going to make people, because I think Green Lantern's one of those superheroes who I think, I don't know, he's not in, is he anyone's favourite? I think he's nobody's favourite. Mm. But after this is going to breathe new life into this superhero. I have no bad notes about it. And also in the first episode, just even the music, the music they use, like they use Leon Bridges' I'm Coming Home, which is one of my favourite songs of all time. Everything about it Aaron Pierre is such a, I've got room in my life for a deeply sensual superhero.
I'm sure you have room in your life, Aaron Pierre.
I love it. You will lap it up. It's great. James.
I mean, it is. It is all of those things. It is by degrees the best thing to come out of James Gunn's DC universe. Admittedly, from my perspective, that bar is exceptionally low because, as you know, I hated Superman with the Fire of a Thousand Yellow Suns. But this is, it's extraordinary. I mean, it's what happens when you take all of the aspects of this character and ground it so thoroughly in a way that feels organic and feels real. And even the more, shall we say, because there are elements, there are aspects, and this happens in all superhero stories, there are aspects of these things which has an absurdity to them. Like the Green Lantern Oath, perhaps, you know, in Darkest Day and Blackest Night, all of that, the fact that he's charging his ring from a lantern, you know, all of those things. They manage to make all of those things either funny, or there's a humor. Even like they make fun of the oath in this. Like a character literally makes fun of it, and it's like they're very self-aware. It's very knowing, but it's also very respective of the source material. So it's not in any way denigrating it for people who are fans of it. You know, it may not be the intergalactic story some people were looking for because this is a detective story, right? Like that's what it is—a mystery story. They're trying to solve a puzzle. But the joy of those two characters together I mean, they're wonderful. And Aaron Pierre's character, John Stewart, not that one, like his backstory is fascinating. There's a whole episode dedicated to that. It's heartbreaking. It's a little awful. Mm. But, and I mean that in terms of, you know, what happens to him and stuff, not the episode. The episode's wonderful. But I watched, I think, 5 episodes of this last night, back to back, and then had to go to bed.
Yeah.
But it's completely brilliant. It's, you know, I think deservedly going to be on a shows of the year list somewhere.
It's going to be on mine.
It's really, really good. This is kind of one of those must-see shows this year, I think, without
doubt. And it's really, like, I do think if you are like me and you're a bit of a Marvel, like, I'm very Marvel-y, I think you will be turned.
I think if you don't like comic book stuff, you will still like it.
Oh, definitely. No, that's my moment.
That's the other thing.
Don't be put off.
No.
Because you could know absolutely nothing about what the Green Lantern is or DC Universe.
It doesn't matter.
It works totally.
Think of this as a galactic peacekeeping, you know, organisation drama. Think of it as True Detective with superheroes.
Well, that's the whole point where someone says early on, why don't you wear the suit anymore? He says, I wear it on special occasion. He just walks around in a leather jacket. Like, he doesn't care.
Can I just say, I love that bit. And there's a court scene in the first episode where they say, I mean, we're going to, you know, they get bail because they're like, I mean, he's a flight risk because he can actually fly. It's like those little moments, they're just brilliant.
Yeah, it's really, really good. I like really, really enjoyed it. Thought it was loads of fun. Watch it is all I'm going to say.
Yes.
Lanterns then, which is on HBO Max. When, Boyd Minster?
I think from today, Monday.
From today, Monday. Yeah. Okay. Next up, we have Ludwig, Series 2, which is as much fun to say as it is to watch. And this is David Mitchell's prodigious puzzle solver taking on more mysteries, now not pretending to be his twin brother, but actually as himself. And it begins here with an episode which is a less conventional Who Didn't Done It? After a body turns up at the opera. Steph, is this a puzzle worth solving for you?
Well, you know what? I think I've made it known that I'm not really into the kind of cozy crime. You know,
I've made it perfectly clear.
I'm very, you know, kind of true crime. I love my true crime or like real, like high-end kind
nasty,
of crimey
vicious,
drama.
Disgusting.
But, and I didn't, yes, thank you, Boyd.
Sure.
Yes. And I didn't watch season one, but I did do a catch up on season one, so I knew exactly what happened. And they do a nice reel at the beginning of this anyway. I thought this, I mean, it's dynamite casting, isn't it? Because Anna Maxwell Martin is just, I mean, I'd watch anything with her in really. And David Mitchell. What I love about David Mitchell is it really is just David Mitchell playing David Mitchell in this. And he's wondrous, so why wouldn't you like it? What I especially loved about this, because it's not particularly my bag, is I enjoy the fact that there's this ongoing mystery of where is his brother. The other thing I really enjoyed, which is harking back to my Murder, She Wrote, love, is that I enjoy the fact that this whole mystery of the murder in isolation gets wrapped up in one episode. So you can just watch one episode and it's all wrapped up and you know who did it, done it, didn't do it, or whatever. And that, to me, was very appealing. It's not setting my world alight, but I really thoroughly enjoyed watching this, and I like to be in the company of David Mitchell and Anna Maxwell Martin.
There's a weird wave of kind of cozy crime with grumpy old guys at the centre of it. So you remember you had Timothy Spall in Death Valley, BBC show. You've got Mark Gatiss in Bookish, which is back very soon. And you've got this with David Mitchell being brilliantly grumpy. And this is, for me, the Rolls Royce of the genre. I think this is the Rolls Royce of the whole cozy crime. And it's not even that cozy.
It's not that cozy.
No. What cozy crime has come to mean is murder mystery where we don't have your naked woman with a throat cut.
Not salacious.
The tone is quasi-comedic. In fact, quite a lot comedic. Comedy drama with that happens to have murder involved somehow. And it's kind of how they write around the murder and make the murder seem cozy-ish is one of the smartest things about these shows. But I think this is the smartest one. And I know that... James particularly doesn't like procedurals where the mystery is solved.
I do not enjoy an episodic TV show.
I do.
Yeah, same. Mm. But I think it's a really difficult trick to pull off because, you know, to solve the whole thing in an hour, and this has also got an arc going on of the mystery of his twin brother, and that's the ongoing thing that's pushing him and Anna Maxwell Martin, his sister-in-law, and her teenage son. They've got that pushing it, and that's always kind of percolating in the background while he solves the murder of the week. And I think the murder of the week in the opening episode is really clever. It's really well handled. You've got two women in it who go back to the Alan Partridge days. It's a joy to see the two of them back together. It's just supremely enjoyable. And it's funny because it's kind of very slickly produced. It's nicely directed. It's as visually interesting as it needs to be. It's definitely not a basic, you know. What was the show we reviewed recently where you were surprised by how low the production values
Reacher.
Were? Reacher, that's right. In that sense, this BBC One mainstream Thursday night 9 o'clock drama is kind of better produced than Reacher in some ways, because it actually looks great as it needs to look. So I love it. I think it's great.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, like I said, I think it's great. Did you hate it?
No, I don't hate it at all. I think he's really, really charming in the role. It's fun. It has that really light, as you say, cozy tone to it, but it's well constructed. It's got people like Ralph Ineson in it. Like, it's yep. great cast. Anna Maxwell Martin, great cast of characters. But I'm not going to watch it more because I just don't love episodic crime procedurals.
I know what you mean, but I think it's like if you were like having a bit of cake and a cup of tea, like that's a nice thing to watch.
But it's good, yeah. And it feels quality. Like it's not like it's a bad show, or it's, you know, I'm not being snobbish about it. It's just not a genre that, like, I don't like the dip into the shows.
Okay.
But it's a really well done.
The only clunky bit is in the beginning they explain that the two detectives that you work with in the first years have gone, and that's because Geron Howell left to join the Pit. He's Dennis in the Pit, who's brilliant, one of the best characters, and Azuka Hoyle left to do Prisoner on Sky, and those two have gone from the scene.
So they have a device there where they're like, this is why they're not around.
Exactly.
That's Ludwig. Great.
Yes.
BBC One.
Thursday, I believe, 9 o'clock. Yes.
Thursday, 9 o'clock.
The 20th of August, 2026.
Finally this week, we have Sunny Nights, which is an Australian comedy, which sees Will Forte and Darcy Carden as siblings who move to Sydney to set up a spray tan business, which is kind of flawed from the get-go. But anyway, they also get entangled in organised crime. So who among you wishes to combine your knowledge of tanning salons and mafioso?
Oh, I mean, Steph had to lend me her laptop so I could watch this because it hadn't landed in my thing. So I've only seen half of the first episode.
Okay.
Steph. Oh,
right. So Darcy Carden is currently, I'm also watching Five Star Weekend, which Darcy Carden is in, and she's absolutely brilliant in that. Okay, so the brother and sister of Martin and Vicky, who have gone over to Australia to make a business out of their spray tanning. Right. The first thing is, okay, it's a bit too long, I think, this first episode, because it's got that thing of it's a genre blend where you're trying to blend the comedy and serious crime. And the crime is very serious in it. Why is it very serious? It's supposed to be really serious. Martin's also trying to win back his ex-wife who's in Sydney. So there's that thread to it. I want this to be funnier than it actually is. Okay. I wanted this to be really funny. And I hate to say this, but I think if it wasn't for Darcy Carden, this whole thing would fall apart because she's so brilliant and her character is so, she's like, you know, she's kind of a real boss, but she's really funny and but it's sort of inauthentic in the way that such bad things happen, but she deals with them all in a very kind of like, you know, just sort of jokey way, which it just seems very unrealistic. I don't really know how I feel about this because there were parts of it I really enjoyed and I thought were funny. But there were parts of it I just thought, I don't know what this is. I don't know. It's a bit of a caper with this brother and sister trying to get. And when in those kinds of things, the main characters make decisions and you just think, of course you're not going to pay that ransom. Don't be a dick. Like, I don't know. There was bits in it that I just didn't really love or believe. And I wasn't quite sure what I was watching or what I was supposed to be caring about because I didn't care about him getting back with his wife. But centrally, I do really care about the character of Vicky. And I thought she was really kind of well fleshed out.
What about the opening with is it an alligator or a crocodile?
Yeah, I mean, it's an incredible opening. And there is and it comes round, you know, to what actually happens in that. I'm not sure. I'm really not sure how I feel about it. And I think it's because I need to watch a couple more of them. And I was only given one, which is the only reason I didn't watch any more of them. But James, what I feel like you hated it.
No, I wanted to hate it. Don't get me wrong, I didn't love it. It's very much not my kind of thing. But it kind of, when I looked at the runtime, I thought, oh God. So it's a bit long, isn't it? This is a little bit long, because the first episode is nearly an hour. And I was like, okay, this is going to outstay its welcome a little bit. And early on, I thought this is a little too wacky and a little too silly for me. But weirdly, when it got into it, there's a dryness to some of the Australian wit here that I really appreciated. Mm. So Darcy Carden, kind of, obviously, character's American and quite over the top and comedic. She's funny. Will Forte kind of fades into the background a little bit in this show,
yeah,
I have to be honest.
He's really good in four seasons, so it's like...
He's there, and he's doing stuff, but he's not...
He's not a funny character. He's the straight man.
He's the straight man, yeah. And I think, therefore, he doesn't really stand out. Whereas I think it's the Australian criminal element. I found them quite entertaining.
They are entertaining. Do you know what I mean, though, when I say I'm not sure? This sounds like a really strange thing.
You know what it's weirdly like, though? Do you remember Big Mistakes, which is Dan Levy's last show? I didn't watch that. Which is about a brother and sister getting involved with criminal people.
And it's such a similar concept.
Okay. And I think this is better than that. So I think that was really all over the place and didn't work for me. It was really disappointing because I love Dan Levy and I love Schitt's Creek, etc. I think this is more coherent from what I've seen. I've only seen half of the first episode.
It's good. It's really good.
But it is too long. You're right. It needs to be half hour or 45 minutes.
I wouldn't call it really good. I think it's fine. It's okay. It's decent. There's nothing wrong with it. Maybe it gets better as it goes along. I mean, I won't find out. I'm not going to lie to you. But
put it this way. In it's not a strong week and we were scrambling around for a third show.
I think that's fair.
It was either this or Kabul, which
had been out for like 2 weeks.
I will just say though,
I do think Darcy Carden's good in this.
Oh no,
but I just
she is, she's great.
I don't know. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I know exactly. Because the thing is, it's a hard line to walk when you do these kind of like, is it a drama? Is it a comedy? It sounds like, oh, it doesn't matter. Well, the only reason it matters when you apply comedy plot devices and character decisions to a show that feels slightly dramatic, then they don't ring true.
No,
and I think that's where it falls down slightly. But anyway, Sunny Nights.
It's just started on ITV1 on Sunday night, last night, and carries on weekly, I think, about 11 o'clock at night. It's a weird bit of schedule.
Just to make one last point, I think the other thing is the tonal shifts are too quick in it, going from comedy to crime.
It does whiplash you around the place.
Don't talk to him about tonal shifts, we are all day.
Sorry.
Oh, God.
Anyway, we are out of time, so we're going to get thrown out of the studio. That is it for this week's podcast. We hope you've enjoyed it and our little animated interlude. Do subscribe to Pilot Plus, not least of all, because you want to hear what we thought of those animated shows, and you'll only be able to find out on Pilot Plus. But please do. It's not very expensive and you get lots of good things for it. We'll be back next week. And what will we be doing? Who knows? What is next week? As you said, Bookish is coming back. Fightlands on Sky Atlantic. Dark Matter comes to Apple. That'll probably be embargoed, but I've seen it all anyway. But that's very, very exciting. And we will have one or both of Carl Chandler and or Aaron Pierre. And then it's in a state of flux at the moment, but there will be at least one, possibly two Green Lanterns on this podcast next week.
I mean, if it's not Aaron Pierre, you'll have Steph to answer.
I think it really should be Aaron Pierre.
Yeah, well, there's a very real possibility that we have a custody situation where I might end up doing both of them and then one of them goes to the Empire podcast, but we're going to figure it out. Don't worry.
Okay, well, can you get Aaron Pierre and ask him about his star turn in a morning show?
I'll see what we can do.
Priority pilot.
Anyway, pilot out.